This is Women's Focus Setter in Tune 2. My name is Carol Boss, and that song was sort of in the way of how I want to introduce my next guest. And I'm going to tell you first about the radio series Bioneers, Revolution from the Heart of Nature. It's one that KUNM has been extremely proud to air over the years. And this half-hour program is an award-winning series that highlights cutting-edge solutions to major environmental challenges and crisis with breakthrough ideas, technological innovations, and social strategies. And their annual conference that happens every October, called Visionary and Practical Solutions for Restoring the Earth, is widely regarded as a preeminent gathering of environmental visionaries. The speakers are among the most innovative thinkers and doers of our time. And for me, doers is a perfect word. It's a key to who Bioneers are. In other words, as their website says, visionaries with both feet on the ground. And to understand in part Bioneers is to know the individuals who conceived it. And today, I am immensely pleased to introduce you to Nina Simons, the co-founder and co-CEO of the organization. Nina has lots of experience in doing lots of things, including her professional background in theater, arts, and music. And she brought that to Bioneers, that experience, and her orientation toward arts as an integral element for transforming culture, which is something that interests me greatly. She co-produces the annual Bioneers Conference. She's a social entrepreneur, a leader of workshops on cultivating women's leadership, and the editor, along with Aniki Campbell, I hope I'm saying her name correctly, of a new book called Moonrise, The Power of Women Leading from the Heart. So I'm hoping for all of us to end this year and be ready to begin the new one with inspiration and the will to be creative in our thinking and in our doing and the commitments we make. So I think in that respect, Nina Simons is a perfect guest to have on my last Women's Focus of the Year. So Nina, I'm really excited to have you joining us today. Are you there?
I am.
Oh, I am glad. And Nina is did you hear about the weather in New Mexico?
I did.
In fact, your town of Santa Fe, you live near Santa Fe. Winter has arrived, lots of snow. And where is Nina calling from? She is in Hawaii now.
Well, the amazing thing is that from the window where we're staying, there's actually a high peak that has snow on it that you can see from here in Hawaii. So I'm somehow imagining what it's like at home with all that snow. So I'm glad to be with you, Carol. I've spent many a Saturday afternoon enjoying listening to you.
Well, thank you so much, Nina. I'm so glad that you are here. A lot of what Bioneers does, and you do in your women's leadership training, has to do, I know, with affecting change. And I'm wondering if you can just tell us how this all began. Talk to us a little bit about the roots of Bioneers and what preceded its creation.
Sure. You know, I was kind of an unlikely suspect for this kind of work, honestly, because, as you mentioned, my background was in the arts. And I moved to New Mexico and was still working in the arts and in restaurants. And then I met a man who was to become my partner and husband, Kenny Ossibel. And he was a filmmaker and journalist. And he was working on completing a film that was about alternative cancer therapies and the politics of medicine when I met him in 1987. And soon after that, he actually got invited to go film at a very unusual garden in southern New Mexico in the town of Gila. And it was a biodiversity garden that was being cultivated by a master gardener named Gabriel Howard. And we drove together down to Gila to see this garden. And I had grown up in New York City, the daughter of two artists, and never had anything to do with gardening or farming previously in my life. And we got out of the car down there in Gila and proceeded to be given a tour of this garden. And it was an amazing experience, Carol. It was filled with hundreds and hundreds of diverse varieties, whole societies of tomatoes of every color and shape and size, and unusual grains back in 1988 that most people had never heard of, you know, of quinoa, which was the high-protein grain of the Incas, and amaranth, and the amaranth wasn't just amaranth. It was something called elephant head amaranth that grows with these great scarlet plumes that look like an elephant's trunk rearing into the sky, and sunflowers that were about 8 or 9 feet tall and with heads that were about, you know, 16, 18 inches across that felt like they watched us as we walked through the garden. And Gabriel invited us to taste everything as we went along, and there were herbs that were really unusual, things like lemon licorice mint and chocolate basil. Mm-hmm. And I found myself, you know, sampling these things, and my taste buds were just going wild. And there were pollinators buzzing over the whole thing, and the colors were just extraordinary. And I realized that I felt like my senses were dancing. You know, I was kind of in this, I was entering this state of kind of ecstatic, sensorial, I don't know, bliss. And Gabriel then would introduce us to each plant as we went along, and he would introduce us by the common name and then by the Latin name, and then he would explain how they were related to all the plants around them. And I began to understand that this man knew these plants better than a lot of people actually know their own families, and that this was a garden of relationship. And I started thinking and wondering whether the Garden of Eden might have been based on a garden something like this. And as we were leaving the garden, I felt as if the spirit of the natural world tapped me on the shoulder and said, "You're working for me now." And I was sort of floored, and I thought, "Oh, you know, wrong girl. I don't know anything about this stuff. I can't do this." And what wound up happening was that I then learned about how much under threat the diversity of our food plants are because of the consolidation of seeds and seed supplies by corporations that are buying up all of these little companies. And I began to realize that it was actually a really serious thing, a threat for the future of people's health and of the planet's health to help conserve diversity. And so what wound up happening out of that was that Kenny and Gabriel Howarth went on to co-found a company called Seeds of Change. And I quit my job at the Santa Fe Chamber Music Festival and went to work for Seeds of Change and embarked on the steepest learning curve of my life. And I discovered that because I had such a love for, I felt like I was serving the sacred diversity of life. And I felt absolutely unstoppable. I mean, I sort of, you know, worked day and night and loved what I was doing. It just felt like a sacred joy. And eventually became promoted to be president of the company and learned a great deal about, you know, venture capital and startups and running a company. And then out of that really grew Bioneers. Kenny had been researching not only the loss of biodiversity, but how much toxicity and was in our was accumulating in the air and soil and water. And so he started learning about what's called bioremediation, which is the use of natural systems to clean up air and water and soil. And as he learned about this stuff, he discovered that there were amazing people out there who had really remarkable solutions, but that nobody knew about them. And that was when a friend turned to him and said, "Well, why don't you have a conference?" And neither Kenny nor I had ever been to a conference. So we were kind of dubious, but the guy gave us a grant to have our first conference. And so we started Bioneers back in 1990 in Santa Fe.
Wow. So neither of you had been to a conference before?
No.
That's phenomenal.
I think, Carol, it was like beginner's mind, you know.
Yes,
it was
yes.
So useful that we didn't have to unlearn that habit.
Right. Well, that description that you just shared with us of going to Gabriel's garden, a luscious description, this was an experience that sounded like that visit there transformed your life.
It did.
On many levels.
Yeah, it taught me something about what can help make people change or offer people the opportunity to change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I just, and it strengthened my my belief that the carrot is stronger than the stick, and that, you know, it's our joy and our love that can really propel change rather than fear or threat.
So Kenny is the one who actually who came up with the term bioneers. Is that correct?
It is correct. He's a brilliant namer.
He's a brilliant namer.
He is. I'm very lucky for that.
And just out of curiosity, so what was he thinking when he named it bioneers?
Well, I think, you know, he came up with the word through a contraction of biological pioneers.
I see, yes.
Because, you know, the word pioneer has sort of awful connotations if you think about, you know, the conquest that pioneers have typically sort of gained, you know, taken over the West through and things like that. But this was about people who are really learning from nature how to heal nature. And for me, part of what was exciting about it, Carol, was that it was not only about ecological systems, but it was also about human systems.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
You know, because it recognized that we as people are part of a much larger natural system, therefore, you know, our human laws really are governed by natural law. And really everything, you know, we are a part of biology. It's not, it's a false separation that has helped to create so much harm.
Yeah, it's also brilliant in so many different ways. And one thing is obvious, but obviously not obvious to so many people, that we have so much to learn from nature that we are all a part of and can incorporate in our lives. And of course, of what Bioneers is doing, bringing to all of us the visionary thinking of so many people who have all these innovative solutions. And now Bioneers, did you just have your 21st conference?
We did. And actually, if you don't mind, I'd love to just take a moment to acknowledge somebody. When we did our third conference in New Mexico in 1992, we had this sort of tongue-in-cheek recognition of the 500-year anniversary of Columbus. And one of the things that I've always loved really deeply about Bioneers is that it's always had a very strong Native American voice at its heart. And back then, there was a panel about commemorating that 500-year anniversary. And one of the people on that panel is a very wise gentleman who's since passed over, who was from Taos Pueblo. And his name was Richard Deertrack. And what I remember really vividly, Carol, was that he opened that panel by saying, 500 years ago, you came and we welcomed you with open arms. If you came again today, we would welcome you the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember sitting there thinking, oh my gosh, do I have a lot to learn from this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is stunning. So for me, it's about the change of heart as well. It's not just about technology or science.
Right. So you talked about, when I introduced you, you came from a strong art background and theater and music. And I'm wondering, I'm assuming back then those were the passions in your life. And I'm interested in hearing about how that meshes with the work that you're doing, that Bioneers does, and that whole interest in transforming culture. I know I have lots of guests who come on this program, and in some way or another, lots of times the conversation goes to the importance of art and how it is part of a transformational process in many different ways. And so I want to hear your thoughts about that, how you bring that to Bioneers and the partnership in transforming culture.
Well, it's a great question. Thank you, Carol. You know, for me, as you say, art has always been really at the center of what I really believe in and what I'm really passionate about. And when I was in high school and college, I fell in love with theater. And I fell in love with it because I thought that it was the most effective way that I had ever seen to transform the landscape that lay between people's ears, you know, or the landscape between our hearts and minds. And back then there was sort of a lot of what I called transformational theater. It was Sam Shepard plays and Harold Pinter and plays that were really about getting people to question their own belief systems and to look at themselves and see themselves in a different way. And that's what really ignited my passion, honestly. And then, and I decided back then that that was what I wanted to do with my life. And then come to find, it, once I discovered how hard it might be to earn a living at transformational theater and how much professional theater was not that, I became disillusioned and sort of gave up on it for a time. And it's an interesting segue because I think, as you say, I brought that love of art and beauty and transformative experience to my tenure at Bioneers, but I don't know that I fully valued it when I first started doing it. And so over the course of the first 10 years that I was with Bioneers, I was largely backstage. I was sort of, I was making sure that the stage was beautiful. I was making sure that all of the communications were caring and authentic. I was orchestrating the theatrical experience like a stage manager or director, but from behind the scenes. And I don't know that I fully valued my own contribution. And then somebody gave me an assignment to write the story of my relationship to Bioneers. And I wrote this story, and I realized that what I wrote was that I saw myself as the woman behind the man. Mm-hmm. I saw myself as supporting Kenny's vision. And I felt kind of nauseous as soon as I saw that I believed that. But I knew that it was true, that it was my belief system. And at the same time as I saw that it was my belief system, I knew that it was only mine. That Kenny didn't see me that way and that, you know, people I knew didn't see me that way. And so I set about to start changing my own story and realized and started really learning to value all of what I brought to Bioneers. And in the course of that, my big discovery and my most joyful aha, in a way, was realizing that I had actually fulfilled my dream of producing transformational theater in Bioneers, and that it was a very different form than I could ever have imagined. But in fact, that is really how I see what we do, because we do have the intention of giving people offering people a transformative experience so that they understand the world in a new way through hearing a sequence of speakers and arts and performance that help people understand in a very deep embodied way the interconnectedness of all the issues that we face.
Mm-hmm. In case you just joined us, this is Women's Focus, and I'm Carol Boss, and I'm talking this afternoon with Nina Simons. She is a co-founder, the co-CEO of Bioneers, and every year since 1990, as Nina has said, the Bioneers Conference has gathered scientific and social innovators who demonstrate the visionary and the practical models for restoring the earth and communities. She's also the editor of the new book, Moonrise, The Power of Women Leading from the Heart, which we're going to talk about in just a minute. And, you know, one thing I did see on Bioneers' website, there's a quote, there are a number of quotes, but there's one from Paul Hawken, which I really love, which is, Bioneers is central to the reimagination of what it means to be human. And I'm wondering if you can tell me what that means to you. And I think that's going to be a good segue into talking about Moonrise.
Oh, gosh. Well, it's a beautiful quote. It's one of my favorites, too. And, oh, what does it mean to me? There's so many ways I could go into that. Gosh, Carol. But I think one of the things that's really alive in me right now that relates to that quote is the awareness that we are part of this incredibly complex and mysterious web of life, that's a web of interconnectedness. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes we, I think, have grown up in a culture that has tended to separate human beings and environment. And in fact, even the word environment comes from the Greek, which means outside of. And in fact, I think for me, what it means to be human is to embrace our interconnectedness. And our interconnectedness with all of life, not just with other people, but with the elements and the grass and the trees and all of the creatures.
Right. You know, a concept that I find very important and I like to think about a lot is the concept of engaged action. And I know that is part of what Bioneers is about as well. And in fact, in doing radio, I, with all the guests that I bring on to Women's Focus, my hope is that in many ways that people will find something in what they hear that in their own way they become engaged. And of course, there are many, many ways of being engaged. And the whole idea of interconnectedness, of course, is a beautiful one. It's an important, I think, one of the larger challenges in this country is how to encourage people, how to inspire them, how to foster social engagement. Because I see this nation, I don't know if you'll agree or not, and it's certainly not talking about everyone, but it's a nation of many disconnects. And, you know, not connecting the quality of our life, for example, to the health of our environment. I mean, that's just one major one. What do you think about that?
Well, I completely agree with you, Carol, and I think that we are plagued by disconnects or, you know, false separations is what I tend to call them, and that it's to our detriment, it's at our peril that we allow ourselves to be lulled into or anesthetized into inaction. You know, for me, one of the things that's been really exciting, it's interesting because when we first started Bioneers and for many years, I never thought of myself as an activist. I thought that word is for people who, you know, go do nonviolent demonstrations and get arrested and do direct action. And I'm not one of those people. I'm somebody who wants to affect change through culture. Therefore, I'm not an activist. Well, I've changed my mind about that. I think activism takes many, many forms. And I think that one of the real tragedies in our culture is the tendency to avoid discomfort and pain that has been perpetuated, really, by the pharmaceutical companies, among others, and the doctoring professions. So that, you know, people who start to feel despair think they need to have antidepressants. And honestly, I think given the state of the world, despair is a very appropriate emotion to be feeling at various times. But I think that the real antidote to despair is action rather than antidepressants. And so I think it relates to the Paul Hawken quote as well, that for me, you know, the reimagination of what it means to be human means I want to be present with all my facilities, with all of my capacities. I want to be as alive and awake in this life, in this precious life, as I know how to be. And that means accepting the value of all of my emotions and choosing to live my life in a way that is as congruent in connecting what I care about and what I act on behalf of as I know how to make it. And for me, that's a lot of what both Moonrise, doing the book with Annika Campbell, and also the Cultivating Women's Leadership work that we've been doing is all about, is helping ignite that spark in women and helping us get out of our own ways, because we've got an awful lot of acculturated learning that tends to trip us up.
Mm-hmm. So when did you first think about putting together this book, which you edited?
Well, it's a funny thing. You know, Kenny sometimes sees what's coming for me before I do, and so he started nudging me about doing a book. And I wasn't at all sure that it was the right thing for me to do. But he kept nudging me, and eventually I listened, and what I realized was that, I first started thinking about it probably a couple of years ago, and then I spent a year really getting ready for it and realizing that it gave me an opportunity. You know, when you program a conference, it's often an invisible art form. If it works, everybody says, wow, great program. But nobody really thinks about the craft of who you select and what sequence you put them in and how you do that. And so doing this book gave me an opportunity to actually read the stories and the talks from probably a couple of hundred presenters, mostly women, who I had helped to program over the years. And so it gave me an amazing opportunity to kind of review the arc of what I've been seeing about women's leadership and how I believe that women and men, but principally women, are really reinventing what leadership looks like. And I think that that's actually an important idea, because what I've discovered through my work, both with the women's leadership trainings and public speaking and being in circles of women and speaking at conferences, is that many of us seem to have a very conflicted relationship with the idea of leadership. And I know when I first started being acknowledged as a leader, I was sort of stymied because I thought, I don't feel like a leader. You know, I feel like I'm just putting one foot in front of the other and doing the best I can. What makes that leadership? And what I realized is that we've all inherited a kind of internal definition of leadership that's not really very appealing, and it tends to be self-sacrificing. It tends to lead by charisma or domination. It tends to often be aggressive. It tends to be single-focused and not to have any work-life balance, you know. And many of the leaders that we've grown up seeing have either been killed for being targets or been targeted for their leadership or driven themselves into the ground. So when you think about it, it's a model that really no one in their right mind would aspire to. And if what we really need, as you say, is engaged action, which in a sense is a kind of leadership,
mm-hmm.
because I think this new leadership doesn't require followers, it requires being in alignment with what you most care about and acting on behalf of that, that you know, we all need a model of leadership that we can wholeheartedly aspire to, that frankly one of the most important things I can imagine as a gift to the world would be to inspire the leadership in each other and to keep growing each other in the best ways we know how.
Well, your book is, you have writings by quite an array of people. They're not all women. Most of them are women. Do you want to pinpoint one, for example, or a couple that talk about model of leadership that...
Sure. Well, you know, one that I especially love is a woman named Judy Wicks, and many folks out there may have heard of her. She started a restaurant in Philadelphia, and initially she was a single mom, and initially she started a muffin shop, just as a means of earning a living to support her and her kids. And the muffin shop was successful, and then eventually it turned into a restaurant. And then when the restaurant became successful, she kept looking for how to align it more with her values. And she realized if she was going to serve meat, it was really important to her that the meats be not only organic, but locally and humanely raised. And she had trouble finding some of the meats that she wanted to serve that were locally and humanely raised. And so she started practicing philanthropy with some of the money that was coming off of the restaurant. And she started lending out money to projects to help, you know, support a pork farmer, a pig farmer, to be able to have humanely raised pigs and organic. And then she started taking her customers to introduce them to social justice issues. So she would take them to Nicaragua to visit the coffee plantations where their coffee came from. And, you know, her restaurant became this hub of public education. And then after all of her restaurant was organic and humanely raised beef and meats. Then she decided that she wanted to help the other restaurants in her city to do the same thing. So this was what was really breaking the mold, I think, in an unusual leadership model, is that instead of wanting to retain her competitive edge and not telling other restaurants about what she was doing, she decided actually to create a network and open up all of her sourcing to all of the other restaurants so that as many restaurants as possible in her neighborhood of Philadelphia could follow her lead.
Mm-hmm.
And then she began realizing that small business could be a tremendous engine for transforming the country. So she just kept growing her sphere of influence. It was like each time she learned something, she'd share it, and then she'd go on to the next outer ring. And she wound up co-founding an organization called the Business Alliance for Local Living Economies, which is actually very strong in New Mexico. And it's a network of hundreds and hundreds of small local businesses that are all about transforming their local economies to be healthier and more self-sufficient. And it's a phenomenal organization. And, you know, so there's Judy as this great example of somebody who was a single mom, didn't have any formal training, just kept learning as she went and expanding and generously by sharing everything she learned and knew, transforming the whole area where she was working.
Yeah, that's really a very, very terrific story. And when you hear the phrase expanding sphere of influence, it could for some people have negative connotations when you think of world powers, et cetera, et cetera. But you know, that's what Bioneers did, right? Because you started out small, you had your first conference, you have an amazing award-winning radio series. I don't know if there are books, but there are books, DVDs,
yep.
CDs.
Yeah, and everything.
Yes, and you're reaching millions and millions of people.
Well, and the thing is, though, Carol, it's another false separation. It's like, you know, there's nothing more powerful than acting locally. And we're very mindful of that mm-hmm. with Bioneers because, you know, when we do our conference, we beam it out by satellite. And last year there were like 20 cities and communities all over the country who each had Beaming Bioneers conferences in their own towns. And, you know, they're not all the same. They're just a few hours of content from California where we're doing our conference, and then they're complemented by local programming to feature the folks doing local work at the ground level. And that's what Judy's work was about, too, with the Business Alliance for Local Living Economies. So, I mean, you can expand the sphere of influence while still honoring the local and recognizing that every place is unique and there's no cookie-cutter solution that's going to be right for everybody. But if we're looking to change our mindset and our worldview, there may be some universality to that.
Yes. This is Women's Focus. I'm Carol Boss, and I'm speaking this afternoon with Nina Simons, the co-founder of Bioneers and the editor of the brand-new book, Moonrise, The Power of Women Leading from the Heart. How about another example of a story of someone who is included in the book who, in a sense, is reinventing leadership?
Sure. Well, there's another example who I love, who's also a mom, a woman who's in Chicago named LaDonna Redmond. And LaDonna is an African-American woman who was working in social services, really. She was very involved in, you know, helping get young women off of drugs and providing counseling services and like that. And then she had a son who developed food allergies at a very young age, like 2 years old. He got really sick. And they went through all these really traumatic experiences trying to figure out what was wrong with him because he would eat something and, you know, get violently ill and his face would swell and they'd rush him to the hospital. And it was terrifying, of course. And once they figured out what kind of food allergies he had, she set on a quest. You know, she was this fierce young mom who, of course, adored her child. And she started trying to find the foods that would make him healthy and that he could eat. And what she learned was that in low-income inner-city communities, it's easier to buy a gun than it is to buy a fresh tomato. And she discovered this whole concept that people are actually starting to work on now called food deserts, where there are areas, again, in low-income communities where, you know, you've got loan sharks, you've got liquor stores, you've got 7-Elevens, but it's very hard to get healthy food. And so she set about trying to create healthier food systems for inner city communities. And right now she's working on, first she created farmers markets for her communities where they accepted food stamps. And now she's working on creating a cooperative that will be a health food store for an inner city, for her inner city community. And eventually she hopes to create a chain of them that are cooperative so that the people in that community actually own it. You know, in the same way that La Montanita does such a brilliant job as, yes, a cooperative. So that's, you know, again, it's kind of, you know, her path took a sharp turn as a result of something that happened for her. And I think it's important in terms of illustrating, too, that, you know, sometimes women will say to me, well, I can't do this, you know, this engaged action or leadership thing because I'm a mom. And I don't think that's true, actually. I think women have been leading forever. And if motherhood isn't leadership, I don't know what is. You know, you're really helping guide the formation of a young life. And that's huge. And so, you know, it was through the course of her own motherhood that this leadership path emerged for her, and she's become a really brilliant advocate for low-income communities who are often communities of color in this country having healthy food systems.
That's really an exciting story, Nina. That's really, really something. So it does, in fact, sound like a very inspirational book. You have lots of folks whose writings are in there, including people like Alice Walker and Eve Ensler, and a foreword by one of my most favorite people who has inspired me over the years, Terry Tempest Williams. And
there, you know, I feel incredibly lucky, Carol, because really this book is kind of like a homage to my teachers, because what I realized in the course of doing the book was that over the years, I have had the benefit of being mentored by amazing people, and I realized how much their stories have grown me, and mm-hmm. that when we really listen actively to someone else's story, it can open new possibilities for us. And so, I mean, they are amazing people, and the stories for me are really, they're sort of soul food, you know. Can I offer you just one paragraph that I'd love to read?
Yeah, I was going to ask if you wanted to read something from the book. Absolutely.
Well, it's a tiny little, it's really just an opening paragraph that's a dedication to the book. And I did it kind of swiftly because I knew that not every single story would resonate equally for every reader. But I also did it because doing this book and my work on women's leadership has really helped open my eyes and my heart to a world where I feel as dedicated to ending injustice as to women's leadership. So that's what I wanted to read. It's the very opening.
Mm-hmm.
This book is dedicated to everyone who has ever felt powerless, experienced being the dissenting or minority voice, or felt unfairly judged, devalued, or dismissed for being different. It is intended for anyone who has experienced a culture that elevates some while denigrating others. As women in a society that privileges attributes and people who are, quote, masculine, I believe we all have a particular empathic window on injustice. So, I mean, that's what I wanted to offer. There's lots more I could share if you'd like, but it's really fun talking to you, Carol. So I don't even know how much time we have left.
Oh, we have, you know, we have maybe 11 minutes left or so, or something like that. No, we do have some time left. You know, you were talking about being mentored by amazing people, and I'm going to go back to Bioneers for a minute, even though I haven't had the good fortune to be at a Bioneers conference, but I've certainly, on the radio programs, I've heard talks given by some of the folks there, and it's almost like they are being mentors to thousands, many thousands of people with their stories and what they have done and their ideas. It's really inspirational.
Well, thank you. I mean, I've really come to believe that stories are one of our most powerful tools for changing the world.
Absolutely, yes.
You know, and that, I mean, for me, that process, it's interesting because I was doing a bookstore event in Albuquerque, and a woman asked me a great question. She said, how did you change your inner story? What did you do? You know, and I realized, ooh, it was a very good question, mm-hmm. because really, you know, the way I heard it was, it's kind of like how do you heal from internalized depression? And what I told her was, you know, I can't say that I'm done. I mean, I have to be real and say here that this is an ongoing process for me, and some of it is about just realizing how often I beat myself up rather than appreciating myself, and how severely I beat myself up when I do, you know, and noticing some of the habituated patterns that I as a woman adopted just as a result of being part of this culture, and interrupting them in a mindful way. You know, and realizing that, I mean, we have so many messages coming at us all the time, every day, that we're not okay as we are. You know, whether it's mm-hmm. about our bodies, about our age, about our education, about, I mean, whatever it is, you know. And so I think we're all collectively sort of trying to heal from a culture that is barraging us with messages that we're not okay. And one of the things for me that was kind of a great aha moment was, you know, I've been writing and speaking at Bioneers for about the last 11 years, and I have one dear friend who's a very smart white man, and he said, and so I send him my drafts for input when I'm writing, and at one point he said to me, Nina, if you stop trying to sound like a smart white man, you'll be just fine. You know, and I realized as soon as he said that there was this critic voice inside me that said, oh, you don't have enough facts and figures. It's not linear enough. It's not this enough. It's not that enough. And that when I stop doing that to myself is when I become more authentically me, you know. And I think that's the key to all of us is, for me, part of what's really been guiding this work, Carol, is the notion kind of gets back to this engaged action idea that each of us was born for a purpose, and that I think it's an old Jewish tradition actually that says that before every soul incarnates, they actually know what their assignment is,
uh-huh.
and that then when we're born, we forget our assignment, and if we're lucky, we spend some part of our lives trying to find that assignment again and finding it.
Yeah, that's great.
And I love that.
I want to say something about stories. You were talking about how your many mentors, in a way, presented you with new possibilities. And I think that's what the power of the stories are, too. Mm. They present us with new possibilities. And that's why I know for me, hearing other people, reading other people's stories are so critical. So I want to, you know, this year has been a year. I don't think I've ever remember seeing as much despair, you know, despair and hopelessness and feelings of helplessness expressed as I've had in 2010. And what can you offer to those who are sunk or trying to keep themselves from sinking? You know, with the economy, with war, with environmental disaster, just seems, you know, this has been a rough year.
Oh. Well, it's really true. It's been a really rough year. And, You know, for me, the two of my most powerful teachers about despair have been Joanna Macy and Alice Walker. And Joanna Macy really says, you know, reclaiming an experience of despair is necessary for our whole humanity. And that if you're not, that despair is kind of, it's like the taproot that gives rise to our full power. It's like if you think about, you know, I think about sometimes the great metaphor of the mother bear and how the mother bear acts in defense of what she loves. And she is fierce and she doesn't stop to think. She just acts. I think that it's really necessary for us to feel despair. I think that it's part of the demonization of the feminine. And I say the feminine sort of with quotes around it, is that, you know, up until the early 1900s, women were given hysterectomies because they were seen as being too emotional. And what Joanna Macy says, and what I really believe, is that our emotions are important sources of intelligence for us. They're telling us what we need to know. They're our body's way of letting us know something's wrong. And if we don't feel them, then we cut off our capacity to feel at the high end of the spectrum, too. That's sort of the contribution that Alice Walker made. She had an interview with Pema Chodron that I remember where she said, you know, I think of my despair and my joy as being two poles of the same spectrum. Mm-hmm. And that in order to fully feel my joy, I have to be willing to fully feel my despair. And so I've come to believe that that's really necessary. And that actually, so, you know, for me, when you say, you know, what would you offer to people who are avoiding feeling despair, I would say, give yourself permission to feel it. And give yourself permission to feel it fully, because it's only by feeling it fully that you can hit bottom and come back up. And it's if you don't feel it that you never get to the bottom, and then you stay in this under, you know, in this sort of netherworld that's neither here nor there. And for me, you know, I've also been on a quest to reclaim a healthy relationship to anger. One of my teachers is a woman named Jeanette Armstrong, and she's a Native woman from the Okanagan tribe in British Columbia, and she's got a piece in the book that's beautiful. And she taught me that there is a healthy anger that, you know, I learned as a woman to stuff my anger very early. And she said, no, you know, there's a healthy anger that rises up pure and clean from the earth through your feet. And it's what ignites your full power to act. And so for me, you know, the experience of the oil spill in the Gulf was so painful. And at the same time, I had to keep reminding myself to feel my anger, because that's what strengthened me to do anything about it and to support my sisters who are acting on it. Mm-hmm. And part of it, I think, too, is there's so much despair. There's so much that's broken and that's happening in terribly painful ways in the world that we don't know where to turn our attention next.
That's right.
And I think, you know, part of what's true for me is having to remind myself that I don't have to respond to it all, that's why there are so many of us. I have to choose what calls me the most. And I have to feel the truth of, but not feel compelled to act about everything, because I can't, and it's just overwhelming, you know. And the economy, I mean, you know, part of what's true for me, Carol, is that there's a silver lining in this economic meltdown, which is that I think that the only real security lies in our relationships. I don't think it lies in how much money we have in the bank. I don't think it lies in how good a job we have. I think that it lies in our connectedness to our friends, to our family, to our neighborhood, to our community, through our faith, whatever way it is, You know, my father used to say that the measure of a life was how much love was expressed at a person's funeral. Mm-hmm. And I actually believe that that's really true. Like, how many lives can you touch? And how deeply can you touch them? It doesn't even have to be how many. It's how deep, you know? And so for me, you know, what's become true about the economic thing is that it's part of, we're living at a time when so many aspects of our social structure are broken and corrupt and falling apart in big chunks. And there is an old world and an old civilization that's dying. And at the same time, there's a new one being born. And there was a time at Bioneers in a panel where it was a panel about environmental health and that same disconnect that you were talking about earlier. And a woman stood up at the end and she said, I'm a midwife. And there comes a moment in every birth when when you know something's going to change. It's a moment when the mother cannot bear any more pain. It's a moment where things have become so bloody and so messy and so scary, and the mother feels that she absolutely can't bear one more contraction. And that's the moment, she said, when you know the baby's about to come. And I think that's the moment we're in as a society. And so for me, it's an important awareness to recognize that at the same time as there's terrible pain and suffering and awful pollution and all kinds of destruction going on, there's also a new way of living being born among us. And you can see it in the young farmers that are springing up all over New Mexico. And you can see it, you know, in the greater awareness about food and water and people taking action to restore rivers and watersheds. And you can see it in how many people are starting to use renewable energy and be more mindful about, you know, driving and gas and efficiency. And, you know, you can see it. You can see it all around. It's just a matter of where you put your attention. So for me, it becomes kind of a mindfulness practice of recognizing that I can give my attention to the death and destruction, or I can give my attention to the new world being born. And there's something a whole lot more fulfilling about giving my energy and attention to living in a new way that's loving and kind and just and safe. And I think, you know, the more of us do that, the faster the new world will be born.
Well, Nina, that is a beautiful response to a question you didn't know that I was going to ask you. You know, thank you very, 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 very much. For me, I'm needing this year in particular inspiration, and I know inspiration comes to me in many forms. An important way for me is through words, the spoken word and the written word. I can hear something, and I'll jot. In fact, I just jotted down a few things that you said because they are inspiring to me. They give me some kind of strength, and I'm finding the need in the last months to put myself, make sure I'm in situations where they have an opportunity to talk to people who, now this is a subjective word, who talk creatively in visionary ways where I can partake in conversations like that, because it gives me a sense of belief that there can be new possibilities, that things can change. And so that's all part of community, I think,
yeah,
that you've been talking about. And so there's lots of things we have to allow ourselves to be in touch with, and I agree entirely about letting ourselves feel the anger and feel the despair. That's really an important part of it.
I think it's kind of reclaiming the darkness, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And also, Carol, I just want to reflect to you. You have a really wonderful, creative, insightful mind, and we all need to be met in the places where that are our learning edges, you know. And so I think, you know, finding ourselves in contact with the people who can hear us into new possibilities.
Yes, yes.
Is just so important and so healing right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for me, that's one of the greatest ahas of doing these women's leadership trainings is how profoundly we have the capacity to grow each other. And it's really joyful, you know, and once you've experienced it, it's hard to go back,
right?
You know, and there's no reason to.
I have this habit of when I get an idea or I'm talking to someone that reminds me of something or something I want to remember, I write it on a little scrap of paper. And if I'm eating dinner with someone, I'll grab a napkin and write it down. And it's like I stuff it in my pocket. And I tend to lose these little pieces of paper. So upon a recommendation, I finally, just a few weeks ago, got a book that I keep that never leaves my desk that I can write things on. And also now carry a little tiny notebook that fits in my pocket. So...
Beautiful.
Those inspirational ideas will not be lost when I take keys out of my pocket and they fall on a street somewhere. So, Nina, I want to thank you. It was delightful to finally meet you, and I am so happy that you were able to take time from, I don't know what the view is out your window right now in Hawaii. What are you looking at right now, by the way, besides the telephone?
I'm in a town that's called Waimea on the Big Island of Hawaii.
Uh-huh.
And it's very odd because it's actually a cattle ranching town.
Uh-huh.
And so we're staying through the very generous gift of a friend at her home here. And when we first got here, I guess the cattle must have been somewhere right nearby, and so we moved into the house, and all we could hear was cows mooing, and we kept laughing. We just thought, this is the weirdest soundtrack I've ever heard in Hawaii. But now the cows have moved on, so it's beautiful, and we're getting ready to go to the beach.
Well, you have a beautiful day, and thank you so much for spending this hour with us.
Well, Carol, what a treat, really, enormously, and I hope folks will consider coming and doing our women's leadership trainings with us. Carol, you should come join us. You'd have a blast. It would be amazing.
Tell us where folks can find out. They go to bioneers.org?
Yeah. If they go to bioneers.org and just, you know, it's easy to find women's leadership. There's tons of information there about the trainings and how you can apply for them. We're doing one in northern New Mexico this summer in late June.
Mm-hmm.
And the book is also available on the website.
That's what I wanted to ask you. We almost got off the phone without telling folks. So you can get it through Amazon. It's on Kindle, ebooks with borders. And is Nook Book what Barnes & Noble equivalent? Oh, you don't know?
I don't know for sure. But I know it's on Kindle. I know it's available at your local independent booksellers. I know you can get it online anywhere. And you can also read samples of it and read reviews of it on our website if you'd like. You can also order it through Bioneers.
Right.
So it's all there. And if you go onto the Bioneers website and you put your email in, then you'll be notified of all kinds of Bioneers events and goodies. And we're careful not to send too much. But, you know, if you'd like to be connected to the Bioneers community, we'd love to be connected to you.
Very great. And again, the new book is Moonrise, The Power of Women Leading from the Heart. Thank you, Nina Simons.
Thank you, Carol. Great to be with you.
Great to be with you. Enjoy.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.